Last week, the world lost an incredible woman and renowned human rights activist, Dr. Hawa Abdi. As we mourn Hawa and reflect on a life dedicated to serving others, we wanted to share an interview we conducted with her and her daughter, Deco, back in 2011. As you may know, Hawa became Somalia's first female gynecologist after losing her mother in childbirth at a very young age. She was committed to lowering her country's rates of maternal mortality. But when civil war hit, Hawa knew she needed to not only care for women and children, but all of her neighbors in crisis. This 2011 interview, held at the height of the crisis in Somalia, focuses on Hawa and Deco's work turning their clinic into a refugee camp and compound with a hospital, a school, and safe haven, serving more than 90,000 people. We hope you'll enjoy this conversation with this unparalleled leader, and that you'll join us in living out her legacy by staring down seemingly insurmountable obstacles and using your power to empower others around you. Here's the interview. So I'm so thrilled to be joined this morning by Dr. Hawa Abdi and Dr. Deco Muhammad, her daughter, from Somalia. Vital Voices has had the great privilege, quite frankly, of working with these two women, as well as Dr. Hawa Abdi's second daughter, Amina, to support their important work. We have a partnership with Glamour Magazine and their Women of the Year Fund. And to date, we've actually raised, thanks to the wonderful support of so many, about $200,000 to support their important efforts in Somalia. It seems as though right now you can't open a newspaper without reading about the violence and the crisis in Somalia. And in fact, just this morning, the United Nations reported that the famine will likely spread to every region of the southern part of their country in the next 4 to 6 weeks, impacting roughly 3 million people. So it's certainly a very dire situation. It's something also that the Obama administration is taking quite seriously. They've even lifted the ban on aid workers engaging with the known terrorist group, Al-Shabaab. And that is an organization that has a link to Al-Qaeda and has a very strong hold in the South. And the only way that aid workers can go in and out is to actually engage with them. And so they have lifted that ban. It's been 21 years and 14 attempts at building a government, a sustainable government, in Somalia, with really with no success. And it's really considered a failed state, a fragile state, by the United Nations. 50% of the population are currently living in crisis. It's certainly one of the most lawless places around the world. And it's certainly a place that needs the kind of leadership that the two women that I'm sitting next to here in our studio have brought to their country. In 1983, Dr. Hawa Abdi started her journey. And I think if she thought back then where she'd be today, she probably couldn't even imagine. She started the first very small one-room health clinic to address a rising problem in Somalia, the rise of maternal mortality, which is actually 4 times higher in Somalia than it is anywhere in the neighboring countries or region. As the government collapsed and aid workers fled and famine struck, she's really expanded that hospital or that clinic to an entire hospital, which I've seen pictures of and is painted pink, which I think is fantastic. And a school for 800 children, and a shelter, and she provides food and water for 90,000 people. 90,000 people. These three women, Hawa Abdi and her daughters.
Committed, very committed.
Very, very committed. But I think what's totally extraordinary about what you've done is that it's not just about urgent need. It's not just about development. Really, through your leadership, you are creating a new paradigm. Because as young boys grow up in this camp that's dominated primarily by women trying to live a peaceful, productive, safe, and healthy life for themselves and their families, you are showing that women can lead change.
That is true. That is true. The women can lead change all over the world today. And today is World's One. So all the 21st century's women, we Africans has, you know, less opportunity. And other world, they have more opportunity than us. If we connect and we unite to change this world in a better way, we can change. And we can do this different of life of these poor people who is dying by starvation, by gunshots, women who is suffering, children is dying by severe malnutrition, mothers are, you know, maternal mortality are very high in Somalia. So we can change this life if we will get unit and to be committed to change this world in better way for our grandchildren and those poor children change their lives.
Deco, I want to bring you into this conversation. You have talked quite a bit about the fact that you are against handouts, that you want development, that you don't just want to look at the crisis and the urgent needs and really the aid organizations putting a Band-Aid on that sort of urgency, but really looking at how do you engage in sustainable development in partnership with the people.
That is right. And because of the facts we have on the ground in Somalia, you can see 20 years was what the aid created, a society of dependency, the society who doesn't want to work, the society who just want to take out the handouts. It's very sad. The country is just collapsed. And this is one of my mother's ambition, and that's her vision. Like, no, it's a farming, no handouts. And we are passionately supporting her because that is true. We do not need the handouts. We need to develop and empower the society.
I know that your camp actually tripled in size from 2006, 2007 to today. How did you manage this expansive growth? How do you, just the three of you, manage to support and protect 90,000 people when you have so much lawlessness, chaos around you outside the camp?
I think it's the people. It's our boys who grew up in the camp, who just meets every day in front of the doors when this disaster happened and transitional government packed up Ethiopia and people all flew from Mogadishu. And from 30,000, we reached in a couple of years, 90,000 people. They are the one who were in the front door. And they were the one who receiving the people. They are the one who settling the people and trying to find empty spaces. And we were working day and night. We didn't have that any support at all. And we were trying to do some support. And the people is the beauty of the power. They are the one who created this. We are just mine for them. We're just giving them directions and guiding them and the leadership of my mother. But the people in the camp, they are the one who's taking care of themselves.
Most. And the WFP at that time was feeding us, the World Food Program, giving us dry rations for our IDPs. We were giving them water, health care, space to live, you know, to assist the mother, which is in labor. Children, if they sick, we were treating. So we remained calmly, and we conducted two simple rules that no clan division in Somali society, no man can beat his wife. So this simple rule is it functioned well, and with our young boys, but we oriented them. And we help to grow up. They help also us to make, you know, to make functioning these simple rules. So we were calmly, you know, friendly, peacefully living, helping each other. And still the camp is functioning in that way. Now the people are coming more and the space becoming less and less. So we need to expand. To expand, it needs also some economical powering.
So currently, your family farm, which you, of course, have turned into this camp or village for the 90,000 people, is 1,200 acres large, as I understand. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have also a seaside, which is 3 kilometers, that we want to send the people to fish the ocean. And we have also a farm, other farm, to send some people, about 5,000 families, to farm, and another 5,000 families to fish. But it needs some economical empowering for those IDBs, their shelters, water, medicine, and equipment to work, farming equipment and fishing equipment.
Dako, you have talked about the widespread practice of female genital mutilation throughout Somalia. 98% of the population is affected. Do you allow FGM to be practiced within the walls of the camp?
No, we don't allow, basically, because we are the one who's the doctor firsthand receiving the consequences, and it's wrong to do it. So we try in our Women Educational Center to teach the women and the mothers who enforcing this, the grandmothers who's doing this, to educate them not to do it. That's how we're fighting against it.
What we know certainly is that culturally harmful practices like FGM are probably one of the most difficult challenges in our world to address because they're so deeply rooted into culture and tradition and pride. How do you begin to get at the root of that and to really shift that culture?
It's very difficult. It's very hard to get out. But we know the reason why they're doing it. They're doing for a woman to be more virgin, for her husband, for future husband. They're doing it because they think because it came from the religion. So that's the two rules. And the third one, they're doing it because their grandmothers used to do it. So when you come from the issue, the roots, and say, you know, this is not in the Quran. It doesn't say religion. You have to practice. This is wrong. You're cutting somebody's parts. Or when you say, you know, the man, you have group of men against it and say, we don't want our wives to suffer. We don't want a woman who were cutted. So when you have this packing up in two sides to educate the mothers who's doing it, that's, I think, the way we should focus and try to overcome the tradition and show, you know, all the traditions are not good.
And certainly women are dying because of this practice. There are huge complications in terms of pregnancy and delivery. I know, Dr. Abdi, that your mother died in childbirth. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you were there when she passed. Was that one of the reasons why you decided that you wanted to become a doctor?
My mother, yes, that's why I became a doctor. Do not feel the pain I feel when my mother died to other children. And I tried to be OBGY because my mother died this complication. At that time, the medicine was not moderate according this today's standard. And there was not equipment enough. The doctors were fairly practicing. They were limited. And even no one tell me which diagnosis. But I remember that my mother was pregnant. And because of that complication, she died. So I decided after that to be a doctor.
Why do you think that maternal mortality rates are so much higher in Somalia than the surrounding areas?
Because even one of the reasons is this FGM.
And the access and education.
And the access because the mother is not coming on time to the doctor to see how the situation is during their pregnancies.
Have you been able to reverse those statistics? So if you just look at the numbers of pregnant women inside the camp.
No, sometimes we have we have people who is going other camps or other places to bring us. And we were having even cars if they do not have, the expenses of transportation, we were sending the young people trained and a car to bring us to our place, consultation free. We were checking now we will begin to do that.
I think, yes, we did, because the maternity program that Vital Voice now supporting since March of last year, it helped a lot, and it grew.
I'm so grateful for Vital Voice and the American donors who is helping us to do that job.
It's really been hundreds of people, really an outpour of support, hundreds of people who've gone to our website, who've sent us checks, reading about you both in Glamour magazine, reading about the wonderful article that Nick Kristoff wrote about you, raising awareness, and looking at this current crisis in Somalia and thinking about how can I do something, and looking to both of you as here are two women, three women, including three women. Amina, who are leaders, who are leading in a different way.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about women's leadership and how you're trying to shift the paradigm. Hawa, you had told me previously that women's rights had really rolled back over the last 21 years under the civil unrest and the civil war. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened? What were some of the forces, where women were before that, when there was government in place, and where women are today? And I'm not talking about inside the camp. I'm really talking more about Somalia. Mm-hmm.
Before these 21 years, the women had a powerful to lead, to do something. Even they were helping the government to rebuild the country. Every day they were doing the job was, we call iska wax u qabso. What is that in English? I don't know. It is in Kenya, Harambee.
It's the influence of early 90s in Somalia for Soviet Union that created socialism, and so the people were more social, and they were including the women, and they were all working for free to rebuild the country.
Yes, many hotels in Mogadishu, very beautiful, but now not. The women built that hotels themselves, and they build the hotels more beautiful, more accommodating, more luxury than government's hotels. They were very strong and they were supported. But this last 21 years, the women become less and less and less their power. And nowadays for those groups became totally out, the women's leadership. But we are trying to show them that we can do something, and they know us. Now we are running our hospital, our camp, our people are functioning normally.
Because of
this economical support that we get from Vital Voice and American population. Thank you.
I think because of how the role shifted, because of civil war, the groups came take over in Somalia, and it's very sad. The woman role lost it in society, and the woman was belittled, and she could not do her job. Even she's the one who's doing and feeding the family, and now it's this group came where not allowing women to be a leadership or not allowing women to walk freely by herself in the city. It's very sad. Mother, if she want to go outside and buy something, she has to some area to escort with somebody, or she cannot go to the bus sitting next to the man. And it's very sad.
Why have you stayed? There are obviously frustrations with the fact that women's rights and opportunities have rolled back in the last 20 years, and you've bared witness to that. But also, the situation is so dire. You, your two daughters, I know your son as well, you're all physicians. You could live anywhere in the world. Why do you stay?
The what they want is that women has no any rule, but practically Last 20 years, I was in front line. I realized that the woman is the most strong human being. They are leading their families. They are caring their children. And they are doing everything for the society, for the country. Those men are just fighting or sitting somewhere, or some died, or some fled from the country, with leaving his children and his wife. So I am optimistic for women in Somalia, and I think that they will change the situation with the help of other world women in the world.
I think that's the reason we stayed. I think that's the reason you stayed for 20 years, having hope.
The reality, they are doing the best job. The backbone of the society is a woman.
And you are certainly a very large part of that.
And I want to show them that we can do everything. We can change. We can fight for our rights.
I know you're having an impact in terms of dealing with the famine. I know you're having an impact in terms of providing health care. You have a school that provides 800 children with education. I've seen the wonderful pictures of the girls in their yellow uniforms. Do you feel as though you're having an impact in shifting the way that people see women and women's leadership?
Yes, it will be. In the future, women will be not only in Somalia, but all over the world. I believe that women will change. Now, all over the world are in cooking boards. There is a fighting everywhere. There is a fighting, you know, there is a difficult life everywhere. But the women can change.
I think so. You are impacting me and all young girls to do work what you're doing. And I think you're impacting boys in the camp. And I think your determination, my mom's like, keep going. I don't know what makes her to keep going inside of her.
We will succeed, you will see. We will succeed. We will succeed.
I absolutely have full confidence. We're watching you succeed. You know, at Vital Voices, we believe one of the core attributes of a leader is someone who really works to sort of pay it forward or replicate themselves. Mm. And recently I read a very alarming statistic that said that for a population of 9 million, about 9 million people throughout all of Somalia, there are only 364 doctors. Yeah. And so obviously being, you know, having medical degrees, I know that you have been working to train, to educate, to really create another generation of leaders.
Yes.
Doctors who are leaders.
Now, really we are engaged. My daughter very engaged to train the Somali doctors, new doctors and old doctors, even to make a refreshment course. Now she went in McGill University, Toronto University, York University, or the Sikh International Hospital in Canada, and they promised that they will come inside Somalia to train the people, to give the training. And in the future, we wanted to reinforce our universities inside Somalia. So in the future, maybe we will have even and food and modern medicine treatment. Hopefully that is, we are struggling.
Yeah, it is a struggle. That is true, but it's achievable. We are focusing to empower the universities that are functioning at the moment in Somalia and producing fresh doctors, but their quality of teaching is not up to the date. So my trip to the end of November, early of November, to Somaliland, north of Somalia, where it's more peaceful and there's a couple of universities, is to empower these universities to have more effective doctors to produce them. And to give these doctors, when they graduated, to hire them in the hospital so they don't flee out of the country. Because the other problem is there's a lot of Somali doctors outside of Somalia. If they had employment and peace, they could come back. And that number of 300 could succeed for 9,000 or 300, 3,000 from 300. So we need to create opportunity to employ the doctors when they graduated, to bring them back and tell them you here, you're valuable, you pay your salary. That's what puts them out of the country.
Obviously, security is such a huge issue, and I would imagine that that you worry about security. I know that you have a number of armed guards or security that you have engaged, about 50 or so, many of them boys who grew up in the camp,
yeah.
Which I think is truly wonderful. I know they have so much pride in the camp.
I think if we talk in Somali community and they sit down someplace to explain everyone his problem, we can solve our problem. But to do that, it's something, that road to reach that place, it's many obstacles. Many people are stopping before reaching the right place. So, but we'll never stop it. We will continue to go.
Yes, we do have our boys in the camp, who is the guards and who is the security enforcing, and they take care most of the little thieves or everything, keep the area safe. But we have enough other boys, but we cannot afford to employ all of them. We could have 200, 300, 500 boys to keep 100% safe in the area, but we need to feed them and we need to employ them so they can feed their families. That's why we have this small amount of numbers, 50 guards, because of the lack of income to create the job again.
The camp had been, for the most part, rather safe for yes. about 20 years.
Yes.
But I know last year the camp was attacked.
Once
can you...
was attacked in 2010, was attacked.
So about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about why it was attacked? Was it attacked because they were trying to get your resources? Was it attacked because they simply do not believe in what you are doing in women's leadership? Was it attacked because they wanted to show that they are stronger than you? And who attacked the camp?
Maybe sometimes everywhere written it's an egoist of men, egoist somewhere. I have read many times. But this religious group is more stronger. So they did not want women. They believe that women is a half human body, human person. The woman is not full human being. They believe that women is a half. So the half must protect them, their house, their clothes, their food, their children, not to be a leader of the society, as they adopted already. But that is why they attacked me. Women leadership, they are not agree with. Even your voice, if you wanted to give your ideas freely, please, you are women, don't talk in front of the men. The men, better to go inside the room, they said.
Yeah, it
so
is.
So I was attacked because I am woman, I am leadership, I am leader in my place, and I have created a society better than what they are doing. They are killing, destroying, doing everything, but not helping the society.
That's true.
Adeka, what do you think leadership is all about? I mean, you have obviously had an extraordinary role model, your mother. You've worked alongside your sister, Amina, who's also a doctor at the camp. And you have helped so many women. You, too, have been such an extraordinary role model.
Yes.
Certainly, all three of you are leaders. What, to you, is leadership all about?
It's being passionate and taking care of the most, I think, for example, my mother, she cares most of her people and healthcare in Somalia. And that's how, why she started the clinic and she took the initiative to be a leader for healthcare for women. And it is, you can be a leader in any society and in any aspect, in any difficult time. Just be passionate what you're doing and do 100%. It will be a difficult, it will be obstacles, but you have to look a brighter side, the end, when you reach your goal. That's a leadership.
And is that how you keep going? Being so committed, being so,
so
focused.
Committed, so targets to reach that place with all your effort, honestly, and plans must be planned.
We are physicians, so it's practical. You see, you create the oasis, it works. You treat the patient, it's healthy. It's something you can feel and touch. So that keeps you going on. It's not like political science. You sit and you discuss in the world issue. It's just you do it. You build a hospital. It works from one clinic to 400 beds. You come up with the rules and you implement it. And it's functioning. It's right in front of us. That makes you keep going.
You know, it's interesting at Vital Voices, we invest in leaders and we talk a lot about leadership. We think a lot about leadership. We spend
you
a lot of time with women
leadership.
Like you.
You are the best leadership because you are collecting all global women in all over the world. You see, you already committed to do that. Every country's women to collect all, to unite their ideas. You are the best nowadays, this world one, you are trying to change. And I'm very happy. I'm grateful to you.
Oh, well, wow. Well, we're humbled to even hear you say that. You know, I think it is interesting, though. The more women I meet like you and your daughters who are taking bold, bold risks to make people's lives better, to lead change.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's so interesting because in so many places I hear, well, you know, women aren't as strong a leaders, or we don't see as many women leaders because they don't take risks. Yeah. I think that's completely wrong. I mean, I see women on the front lines of change around the world taking very bold risks. Mm-hmm. I think we just take them in a different way. I think that often it's necessity and commitment to something larger than ourselves that drives us to take extraordinary risks. And you said something beautiful this morning when we were in the Vital Voices offices and we had the panel discussion. You said, and I even wrote it down, you said, necessity is the mother of invention.
Of invention, yes.
But
you have, you know, you are very generous because you are trying to over globalization, a women globalization, and training women. And I believe this woman that you are working, you are giving, you are economically, you are giving certainly with help of the other donors even. You are trying your help, every woman in all the corner and all the world. So you will be connect them, you will train them, they will hear each other, and they will change in the future this world in a better way. I believe that. Your initiative is the best.
Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And
you
I thank the leader of this Vital Voice, Secretary Hillary Clinton. Their initiative, I appreciate. And God bless her everywhere that she is. God bless you all.
And I know that our founder, Secretary Clinton, has been very supportive of you and your work, because I think that she sees you as a great shining light, and she wishes that there were, you know, hundreds, if not thousands more Dr. Hawa Abdis throughout Somalia and around the world. That's certainly what we need. I just want to end with one last question, and that is, well, maybe two questions, but they are connected.
Okay.
First, I want to know how we can help you. I mean, obviously, people can contribute to the fund that Vital Voices has set up, and every cent, I can assure people, goes straight to you and your efforts.
Yeah.
But what else can the international community do? And then second, when we support you and your vision, what are we going to be supporting in the future? Where are you hoping to take your camp, your village, you know, your vision in the future? And so how will our support help get you in that direction?
I said the last time in Daily Beast that we have a leader, which is Secretary Clinton. When you collect my money or a support for the Hawa Abdi Foundation, I will write a project proposal which is correct and honestly and beautiful written. Then you will maybe transfer me that, and I will give you feedback. The expenses, how was, what was income, and what was out. So, I think basically, if you will get this lady, you'll get some.
I think your support, it will create a better Somalia, especially women will empower. That's the support, and it will create a less mortality, death on the mother. So if we have a free, you support in our mortality, maternity center in the camp, where we receive everyday deliver. If you support that more and we empower more, we have enough doctors, we could do enough cesarean, we could save a lot of lives. You could reduce 4 times more we have now mortality in surrounding area. You could become maybe equal or less than in Kenya or in Ethiopia or anywhere surrounding us in Africa. That's a one aspect. I think the help you given and the help and hope that all U.S. Donors are giving us, it's like we're not alone. We were alone for 20 years and without glamour, woman of award, glamour woman of year, we would not receive your support and the world would not know what we're doing. So we were just swimming with this huge ocean with the sharks and trying to survive. And now we have somebody who gives us a saving jacket and maybe boat coming to take us out of that ocean. So we are very grateful what you're doing. And I think this is, my mother is very, very humble and trying not to say, but I think her vision takes us to bring peace in Somalia. Our goal is the woman to give the opportunity and create more leadership and to bring women to bring a peace in Somalia, because we need a peace. And women, Somali women, have to stand up. I think that's the only reason.
Yes.
We need to stand up and say, no, enough, it's enough. No more war, no more dying. That's what we should
do. We are not only doctors to treat the people, but even we are healer of the society, to educate the people, to feed them, you know, to care them all. So we need a lot of help and a lot of education to our society, because there are less educated people are there.
Whoever listens, go to the Vital Voices website and donate. We need your support to bring peace in Somalia.
Yes,
really.
Thank you both so much. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your work.
Thanks for listening to the special edition of the Vital Voices podcast. We hope that you're doing all you can to keep yourselves, your families, your teams, and your communities safe and healthy. If you'd like to support our work with women leaders in this country and around the world, you can donate to Vital Voices on our website at vitalvoices.org. Or you can text VITAL, V-I-T-A-L, to 41444. That's VITAL to 41444. Stay safe and remember that we will get through this unsettling time together.